And welcome back to your extended news at noon. Tracy Morgan, of course, with you. We have on the phone with us Dr. John Love. Now, I know we have talked to Dr. Love, the infectious disease specialist with the Butler Health System, many times over the past year, and we've talked about COVID. And we are going to have a separate conversation on where we are with that here in a couple of days. I say that because there's something else that we need to be concerned with, and it's an infection, a bacteria, if you will, called anaplasmosis, and it's carried by ticks, and it's similar to Lyme's, but not necessarily. That's why I wanted to have Dr. Love on to explain this with us. And so, Dr. Love, thank you very much again for joining us. We always do appreciate your time.
Oh, anytime, Tracy. Glad to be back.
Now, I know you're going to describe what this is in your terminology, but let me just set this stage, if you will, because we're talking about this for a couple of different reasons. One, if I have this correct, and please correct me if I'm wrong, this is curable but can be fatal. And then also that the Department of Health has been seeing an increased numbers here in Butler County.
We here in the health system are seeing an increase. The Department of Health is seeing an increase both in Butler County, actually, as well as across western Pennsylvania. So it's a regional thing. We're expecting some communication from the Department of Health regarding this observation, this problem, any day now, coming out to the lay press for kind of publication. We're just trying to get the word out. We're not trying to alarm anyone, but we also want to draw attention to it so that if people have symptoms, they seek medical care and they see their, you know, see their doctor to get treated. And also, it just adds another level of reason for, you know, why we talk about trying to prevent tick bites and tick-borne infections in general. It's just another example of what we're up against.
And as you and I have mentioned before, in the past year, in this age of COVID, there are other issues that are still going on that people have to be aware of. So we'll talk about symptoms as well, but give us your definition of anaplasmosis. What is this?
Sure. Anaplasmosis is a bacterial infection that's caused by a bacterium called anaplasma. Anaplasma are bacteria that are actually somewhat similarly related to the bacteria that cause Rocky Mountain spotted fever, a group of bacteria called Rickettsia. These are bacteria that don't live out in the environment. So these aren't bacteria that you pick up eating bad food or, you know, licking flagpoles or what other people do in their spare time. These bacteria are actually, they're almost like viruses. They're dependent on a host to live in. And so they're animal reservoirs in the environment. And they're typically mammals, mice, rodents, sometimes deer, depending on the species. And then they're transmitted by ticks in the case of anaplasma. And some of the other rickettsia are transmitted by fleas or chiggers or other things. For anaplasma, we're talking about ticks. The frustrating part, or the reason we have issues with this, is these are the same ticks that transmit Lyme disease, the exact same tick species. And obviously, you know, Butler County has long had a, you know, very high prevalence of Lyme disease, which means that we have the ticks, and our animal reservoirs are already carrying the Lyme bacteria. The anaplasma bacteria has not been particularly common in this region. Has been much more common in the eastern part of the state and up into New England. But basically, over the last couple of years, we've seen an increased number of cases diagnosed here in our county and in the region in general, suggesting that the animal reservoirs here have become seeded with this bacteria that the ticks that are already here can now transmit to the humans. You know, I've been in touch with the State Department of Health. From 2019, they had zero cases of anaplasmosis diagnosed in Butler County. In 2020, we had seven. To date, through Butler Memorial Lab alone, we have 18 already this year. I mean, that's not a lot of, you know, a large number of cases, but that's probably the tip of the iceberg. You know, a lot of people may not seek care for this. Some people don't need treatment. They're not sick enough. They're going to kind of take care of this on their own. So we end up diagnosing this only in the kind of the most severely ill. Like I said, it's a tick-borne bacterial infection transmitted in the same way as Lyme disease, by the same ticks as Lyme disease. Ticks can actually carry both bacteria at the same time. So you can get an infection with Lyme and anaplasma at the same time. And so it's really important that we figure out, that we get the word out and we try to prevent cases from developing if we can.
Any reason for the jump between 2020 and 2021? And we're not even done with this year yet.
No, and so that's kind of a question I've had for the Department of Health, because the state does do some level of, you know, screening of ticks for, you know, actually the ticks themselves. They go out and surveys in the environment, and we're still waiting on the results for that. So, you know, give us a better idea of what the environment looks like, what's out there. I've had people tell me that this was a bad tick season, just in the number that they've encountered. So I don't know if it was something in the weather where there's just more, you know, ticks out there, but I do think that there's been probably a migration or a contamination of our animal reservoirs with this bacteria, and that's unfortunately probably something that's going to be here to stay.
Talk about the symptoms, if you would. You say it's similar to Lyme, but not like Lyme. So when we discover some symptoms, do we feel like we have Lyme?
I think a lot of people, when they think about like Lyme disease, they think about the bullseye rash, which, you know, isn't certainly not in every case, but, you know, is one of its hallmark symptoms. Honestly, people who get anaplasmosis feel acutely ill. They feel like they have the flu. They feel like they may have COVID, and which makes things really difficult right now. So the leading symptoms are fever, which can be very high. We're talking 102, 103, headache, muscle aches, and maybe some nausea. There's been, you know, there isn't a rash that's associated particularly strongly with it, and there aren't really respiratory symptoms. So if you have a heavy respiratory symptom, you know, a cough, a shortness of breath, probably not talking about anaplasma, you're probably talking COVID or respiratory viral infection instead. These people, like I said, the ones who get kind of a severe case of this really feel miserable, and they come to the emergency room with these kind of symptoms. Some of them get, you know, there's a concern for meningitis, but headache can be so bad sometimes. At the other end of the extreme, though, are people who will have like a little, you know, a summer cold kind of illness with a little fever, a little achy, and they'll recover from that without any intervention, without seeing a doctor or anything. So the severe cases tend to be in people who are a little bit older, and that's, you know, kind of been borne out with our experience so far here as well. You know, people over 55 or 60, we're seeing, you know, significant symptoms requiring hospitalization, IV antibiotics, just symptomatic support, and, you know, sometimes support for, you know, with IV fluids for maintaining their blood pressure.
Dr. Love, let me ask you about going to the doctor and where you come into play with this kind of illness. Because if we go to our PCP first, so if I have those symptoms, I'm thinking I want to go to the PCP first. Or if I want to go get a COVID test and it comes out negative, then there's something else going on there. I don't automatically think, although we do love you dearly, I don't automatically think I go to Dr. Love, the infectious disease specialist. And I say that because when you go to a PCP's office, with all due respect to all PCPs, I know you're very valuable and you do a great job. But there are a lot of times, like I'll go visit and they'll say, well, I kind of have an idea, but let's just try this, whether it be medication or we'll just try the minimal effort first, because you don't want to jump to huge conclusions. So what happens in that kind of scenario? Are doctors knowing to test for this? Do they test for it? Or are they testing for Lyme and they're not testing for this? I mean, can you explain what that process is like?
One of our endeavors has been to share this information, this observation with the primary care doctors in the area, so that this is on their radar, because if they don't think about it, they're not going to, you know, test for it. If you get routine blood work done because, oh, you know, you look kind of sick, I'm a little worried, you know, I'm going to get just things like, you know, blood counts kind of thing. While that won't show definitively that someone has anaplasmosis, there are abnormalities in the blood counts that are kind of abnormal. And that would generally be not, you know, we wouldn't see them necessarily with Lyme disease or see them with other bacterial infections. And so there might be, you know, there should be something there that would trigger a provider to think, oh, well, that's abnormal. You know, what diseases do I know of that are abnormal, that cause these lab abnormalities, that cause the same symptoms that Tracy had? And what time of year is it? You know, that's the other thing. This is a seasonal illness. You know, this only happens, you know, the peak season for these diagnoses are June, with May and July and then kind of, you know, trailing off into the rest of the summer. If it's happening right now, I think it should be on the list. And we are seeing our PCPs testing for it now. The test is a special test. It gets sent out to a reference lab to Quest. It takes 2 to 3 days to come back. So it's not something like a COVID test where you're going to get an answer the same day or the next day. But, you know, it's something that we've been trying to educate our providers about, keeping it on, you know, on their, what we call the differential diagnosis list, the list of possibilities to explain someone's illness. And this is a relatively new addition for the area to that list. And so we keep reminding people. At the same time, you know, patients can also help kind of jar, you know, maybe their PCP's memories by saying, hey, you know, I spend a lot of time out in the woods, or I do a lot of yard work and I've been pulling ticks off me. That may, you know, those little hints can help provide some story and, you know, maybe enough to help put the pieces together in more providers' minds. So, you know, I think the more education we have out there, both for providers as well as patients, you know, it doesn't do any good to have, you know, one doctor or a couple of doctors that are, you know, facile with this that would recognize it. You know, I'll tell you, our hospital doctors, our hospitalists went from, well, shoot, I've never seen this. What am I looking for? What's going on? You know, Dr. Love, can you see each one of these patients? To now they're like, yep, I know this now. I recognize it. We went through the same process with COVID, where everyone's like, I don't know what this looks like, to I'm tired of seeing this. I could recognize this in my sleep.
Right.
And so it's a good question. And we're all learning together with this as well.
So is there just the one test? And I ask that because, again, if we're talking about Lyme, which is different than what we're talking about today, but when you get tested for Lyme, you could go for just that initial test or go deeper with the Western blot. And that would show you more with Lyme. So if this is similar but different, do you just have one blood test, or can you go deeper with a separate test?
So Lyme testing is a two-step test, so it's not separate. So there's a first screening test, and then the Western blot is a confirmatory test. So, that's how it's supposed to be done. For the anaplasmosis testing, it's just a PCR looking for the DNA of the bacteria in your blood. So there's really nothing kind of beyond that. There are serologic tests, meaning they can look for antibodies to this. But it's not, the PCR is more sensitive, and it's just more appropriate for an acute illness. So that's the test that we run and we generally recommend, and that's the kind of CDC's recommendation.
If anaplasmosis is untreated, I understand that it can be fatal. If that's true, if I'm incorrect, please correct me, of course. But what happens to the body when it becomes a fatality?
It's uncommon for it to be fatal. I mean, people can, you know, if they're not treated and they have an illness, people can have, you know, weeks of symptoms and feel miserable for weeks, which is just no fun, especially, you know, in summertime when people actually want to do things. There are rare instances where this can, this bacterial infection can cause myocarditis or an inflammation in the heart muscle, which seems to be like what people, if they're going to have a really, you know, have a critical illness, a life-threatening illness, that seems to be where they, you know, what the bacteria does that gets them that bad. It's not like it directly infects a particular organ or something like that. It just tends to really get into, you know, the heart muscle seems to be one of the most difficult targets, you know, for the infection. The infection itself, you know, the anaplasma bacterium actually infects certain cells of our immune system. So it can downstream lead to certain problems with secondary infections because the immune system's weakened and things like that. It's been more common in other areas of the country. There's a decent amount of literature out there about it, but you know, the deaths are kind of few and far between. And I off the top of my head, I don't have a good kind of pathophysiologic explanation for, you know, what the most common end result is that would lead to death. Most of these patients do very well once they get on appropriate antibiotic.
And that's what I was going to lead into, is what is the treatment? Is it antibiotics to start?
It is, yeah. So the hard part is there's really only one antibiotic that treats this well, and that's doxycycline. The good news is doxycycline is also one of the first, the primary treatments that we use for Lyme disease. So if someone is thinking Lyme disease or they're thinking tick-borne infection, giving a patient doxycycline kind of covers almost all bases. Okay. People do really well with this. Doxycycline is generally pretty well tolerated. It's not a particularly broad spectrum antibiotic. And after, 24, 36, 48 hours of it, people generally start to feel better. We start to see their lab results improving, their lab abnormalities, and, they start to get back to themselves. The treatment course is about 10 days of antibiotics. So we're not talking about a whole long course of treatment either. It's just a matter of kind of putting the details together. We are, recommending to our providers, if you have a patient that looks like they may have anaplasmosis based on symptoms or exposure or some of those basic lab abnormalities that I mentioned, go ahead and start the doxycycline while you're waiting for that specific lab test to come back. Because, waiting the 2 or 3 days for that to come back is 2 or 3 days the patient could actually have almost been recovered at that point if they were started on treatment and it is anaplasmosis. If it's Lyme, you're taking care of Lyme at the same time. And all those tests can be done, with the same tube of blood, really. So, I think it's just a matter of, again, being thoughtful, with the questions. People thinking about, hey, listen, there is something out there that I, if I get this kind of symptom where I think it's just a flu, that may be something different and maybe something I actually want to get or need to get treated for.
With anaplasmosis, once you have it, do you always have it? Can you get rid of it and can you get it again?
You get rid of it. We're not we can house it, but the doxycycline does a really good job of getting rid of it. You can definitely get it again. There's not going to be any protective immunity from this. So yeah, you can definitely get reinfected. So just because you got it this year doesn't mean you can't get it next year. And so we're going to keep pushing the tick prevention as much as we can.
And I know we're heavy into conversations about vaccines. This is not a situation that you would need a vaccine. There's not a vaccine for it.
There's no vaccine for this at this point.
Okay. And I know this was previously called HGE. Why the name change?
By genetics, the organism was broken out into a separate genus.
Oh, okay. I'll leave that in your ballpark.
Yeah. So there's a very closely related organism called Ehrlichiosis or Ehrlichia, which behaves very similarly. It's a little more severe geographically. It's in different areas and it's spread by different ticks. So we have not seen Ehrlichia in this region yet. But we do have the ticks. So, we'll have both at some point, I don't know. It's treated similarly. It can be diagnosed with a separate PCR. It's very, very similar. They infect a slightly different cell type in the body. And so that's kind of the distinction, as long as it's, the vector distinction and the geographic distinction. I will point out that, the syndromes that I'm talking about, a febrile headache, kind of syndrome. There, I mentioned that anaplasma is part of this group of organisms, are related to rickettsial illnesses. And, there are different rickettsial diseases in different parts of the country, so Rocky Mountain spotted fever is a big one, not really found in the Rocky Mountain area, more in the southern and kind of close Midwest. So when you're talking to your doc about things like this, you got to tell them if you've been traveling, because that may make your doctor think of different things. Because if you've been to Cape Cod, if you've been to the desert Southwest, if you've been to these different areas, there are different things that you can be exposed to, and we got to think about those. So just again, if your provider is asking you these questions, it's not to be rude, and they're not asking to see pictures of your trip. They're just asking because they're looking at, what your risk factors are for different things.
Right, right. And it is good that you're talking about this because, again, in the age of COVID, if it's not COVID and you still don't feel well, you get tested for Lyme, it's not Lyme's disease. So, sometimes it takes a conversation like this for folks to realize, oh, it could be something else. Go ahead and ask your doctor. Again, the education is being passed through the doctors and PCPs in this area. But if you want to ask about it, folks, ask your doctor and ask your PCP and you can go from there. Dr. John Love, infectious disease specialist with the Butler Health System, as always, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Tracy.